Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. This week, we're coming to you with kind of just a laid-back episode, one of a quicker episode I think we're planning on having here. And we kind of just want to talk to you about some of the updates that we've had in our season. We're now into November. It's November 11th. We've had some successes and some not so successes in the last week or two. We want to just update you on those. And then we're kind of going to go into talking a bit about what you can do if you don't have a deer yet. Is it time to panic? Is it not time to panic? What's going on moving forward? Ange, how you been doing this past week or two?
I've been doing okay. I actually got injured this past week while I was in the woods. I had just recently moved over to a different part of the property to try to see if I can't hunt down the target buck on the property. The buck is road rash. And while I was entering into the woods, I'm not going to go crazy into every single little detail, but I kind of, as I've told you before, I do a lot of like on the fly scouting. So sometimes I'll even do scouting in the dark where I'm not looking for a sign. I'm not looking for, you know, certain things that tell me what a deer's doing, but like I might be looking for a better spot. Like if I know, okay, I've been hunting maybe 100 yards this way, I want to kind of cut in this way and come from the backside, or you know, something of that sort, and I'll just look for a tree, something like that. So that's kind of what I was doing. I was trying to kind of come around this creek that's there and come up on this bank that's there. I wanted to kind of get my wind in a certain direction, and I ended up walking into this thick vegetation, and I got tangled in it, and I kind of got, you know, a little fatigued kind of fighting my way through there, found out that it ended up not even being somewhere that I could walk. So I had to backtrack. I ended up having to cross the creek, which I was trying to avoid. And I ended up getting a couple of my shoes wet because I came to the other side of the bank and I kind of stumbled a little bit and I rolled on a rock, kind of rolled my ankle a little bit, and I kind of fell back into the water. And it wasn't the biggest deal. The only thing is when I was climbing the tree, my left foot slipped off of one of my steps. And what it did was, because I had the lineman's belt, and I told you it was funny, normally I climb with my safety belt. I was like, you know what? I just always climb with it. I just leave it, whatever. A lot of people, I think, climb with both. They have the safety line, they move it, and then they have the lineman's belt. So what I did was I moved to just the lineman's belt, which I think is how you climb, right? Just yep. The lineman's belt.
Yeah.
So one thing that you might want to consider, and I'm just telling you because it happened to me, you know, I wasn't planning on slipping, obviously, but you never know what's going to happen. So,
right. You
know, my boot was a little wet. It slipped off the edge of the step. And what happened is, because my weight went down and I had the saddle, it did what it was supposed to do. It didn't let me slide down the tree. But the thing is, it pinned me up against the tree. And another thing that you also know, and that the viewers may know if they listen to some of our other podcast episodes, is that when I climb with my backpack on. I've got my two sticks on either side of my body, which still has the weight of those two sticks. I've got my backpack with all my camera gear on it. So that added weight pushed me up against the tree. And so what happened was I had my right hand on my lineman's belt. My right leg, I basically was in a squat. My right leg was still on the stick, but I had fell down to where my right knee was on the side of the tree. I was in a squat. And my left shoulder kind of went underneath the left side of the lineman's belt. So I was kind of pinned by the belt. I couldn't just stand up because my shoulder was hitting the lineman's belt. So what I did was I tried to use my head to push off the tree to kind of get my shoulder free so I could get my arm up. And I popped something in my, I think it was like my trap or something. I hyperextended it or whatever, something. I heard a snap. I knew I instantly did something. My mom's a reflexology massage therapist. Thank the Lord for that. And I went over and I got an adjustment. So I was okay, but that's another part of the story. And
I'm just glad you had your harness on, because before this summer, when we were talking, we climbed together. You didn't even use a harness climbing before this.
I'm
glad you had it.
I'll tell you what. I still climb basically the same way. The tree I was climbing was not one of the gnarly trees that I normally climb. I probably would have just hugged the tree. I probably would have ended up being better without the lineman's belt on. Because the lineman's belt was on and it kind of got tugged into the tree and it was stuck at the above me, because you put your lineman's belt up and then you move up, and then if you want to lean back, you know, you have the security because the lineman's belt's up. If it's too low, you run the risk of, you know, falling and then and everything else. So it did its job. The only thing is it pinned me. if I didn't have the belt on, I think I would have just hugged the tree and I probably would have been fine. Because I, no matter how I climb, my hands are always free to do what they need to do.
With all that weight,
it's safer to have the, yeah.
If you didn't have the, but if you, look, I guess what I'm picturing in my head is if you don't have that lineman's belt pulling you to the tree, I think when you slip, you fall backwards.
It's possible. I'm not going to say no.
You know what
it's
I mean?
Definitely so, possible. I didn't slip that way.
Yeah.
I slipped into the tree.
Okay.
So my foot, when I went to, it just caught the edge of the step and my foot kind of went forward. So it was, obviously, yes, I could have fallen backwards. Thank God I didn't. But
I'm just glad you're all right either way.
Yeah, the way I fell forward. So anyway, so I kind of got, you know, I knew I was injured instantly in the moment. Sharp shooting pain straight down my back. I knew I was hurt. So I kind of just, what I did was I got myself stood up. I changed it from the lineman's belt to the safety line, and I just hung there for a second, and I kind of just got my bearings. While I was doing that, where I was kind of milling around, where I had gotten tangled up and I was making all that noise in the brush, it wasn't that far away from me. It was just on the other side of the creek, maybe 20, 30 yards, and I heard an animal walking up. So now I don't know if maybe I made a ruckus and maybe a deer thought that I, you know, was maybe another deer or a buck chasing a doe or something like that. So it came to check out everything. So I ended up just waiting there until I didn't hear anything. And then I got climbed up. I got set up. Daylight came. I didn't see anything in that area. I'd made a couple calls. I tried to stick it out. Once daylight came, I pulled my bow back. I was still fine. I could still pull the bow back fine. That's not what it was. It's just I couldn't pull my arm up over my shoulder. Since I got the adjustment with my mother, and I've been doing a lot of stretching, a lot of heat therapy and stuff like that, it's loosened up a little bit, and I've been a lot better. But yeah, so I stuck it out for the morning. I hunt the morning. I didn't see anything, you know. But that was you know one thing that happened to me this week. A positive though, I did harvest my first deer on camera. It was a last light shot, so the light was a little low, but I did get the harvest on camera. Unfortunately, I think I shot it with the same arrow that I shot the 7-pointer, and the lighted nock died. So I didn't get the you know that light whizzing through the night sky that you know that visual effect that would have been pretty cool to see, but. I got the monkey off my back. I got my first harvest on camera, which I'm happy about. And yeah, that's it. I mean, so good and a bad. I'm just going to take it easy this week. I'm not going to get back out in the woods. I've got a couple things I need to do for work that I'm finishing up. And I'm not going to push it. I'm just going to get healthy. And then we got the rifle hunt coming up this week in New York. So I'm getting ready for that.
And the nice thing there is you're gonna be on your feet the whole day with that too. So maybe that up and moving around,
so,
staying,
you know,
loose, not letting your, you know,
one
not
of the
getting
things
stiff.
That people may not know if they haven't listened to other episodes, but I'm you know, normally when the rifle season comes, I like to kind of be a little bit more mobile. So, you know, I'll probably sit the morning and I'll sit the evening, but probably from the ground, and then midday I'll probably get up and try to see if I can't still hunt my way through the woods and make something happen.
No, I mean, that sounds great, and I'll be at the property. I think it's a tough call for me this year because the big bucks have kind of moved on. We're not really seeing them too much on camera. We have confirmation from our neighbors that they're being seen like across the road and, you know, a property or two over, and they're kind of hanging out over there where there was a timber cut done last year. So I don't know if it's worth it for me to be on the family property.
I mean, you can still come with us to the public land.
That's what I'm saying. I might do that. Or
I mean, I think my dad might even be coming. We could probably do some rifle drives. We could do some drives and kind of get somebody positioned and then maybe drive some deer towards one person.
Sure. And then the other option for me too, honestly, is to stay back in PA and throw like a full day sit at PA. I haven't done that yet. Everything has been afternoon, after work, getting, you know, just a couple hours in at the end of the day. So I don't know. I have some options for this weekend. Maybe I'll come just because it's like, you know, I don't want to miss opening weekend of rifle. But after that, I don't really know what I'm going to do. The downside is I didn't update my New Jersey license yet. I haven't gotten like extended bow for Jersey yet. And Pennsylvania doesn't allow Sunday hunting. So when I make the decision not to go to the family property and to go hunt in Pennsylvania, I'm giving up 2 days of hunting for 1 day of hunting. You know, so That's pretty tough for me. The other thing I want to do, I've been thinking about deer hunting Saturdays and then taking Hunter out bird hunting in New York on Sunday morning instead of deer hunting Sunday. So I got some options. I got to look at the weather and see what I want to do there.
I think tomorrow in New Jersey, they stock birds. I think tomorrow morning, I've got a ton of stuff in my truck, though. I was working this morning and I got a truck full of materials and garbage I need to throw out. But I was thinking about going tomorrow, too, because it's not supposed to be that that full. And we didn't talk about it in the podcast, but we just had a YouTube video air of the doe that I shot. And featured in that video in the thumbnail, too, is our friend Gio. Him and his nephew just shot a pair of bucks. They doubled up on Saturday. His nephew Dominic shot a 12-pointer, and and Gio shot a 10-pointer. And I talked to them, and Gio said he's going to be bird hunting too. So we were trying to hook back up and hunt together on Tuesday. So I'm hoping maybe I'll go. Maybe we'll see.
All right. Now, the cool thing is normally we record these podcasts a week in advance. Like we'll record them on Monday and they'll air the following Thursday. So we actually record them like 9 days in advance. We got a little backed up with some stuff. We're actually recording this Monday the 11th, and it airs on Thursday the 14th. Yeah. So we're actually, for the first time ever, really recording in real time, which I think is pretty cool because what we're going to talk about today is pretty relevant. In my last sit, this past weekend, I didn't get to hunt. We had a passing in the family, as you know. So Saturday I was down paying my respects for all that stuff. But the prior weekend, I put a sit into New York, and I got to tell you, hands down, it was probably the most fun, best sit of my entire life. I drove in the dark. I went to a spot that I've scouted the spot. I know it's one of the fingers that come off of this adjoining property, and the adjoining property has the entire ridgetop. I don't know what type of forest they have up there. I don't know if they have oaks or what they have. What I do know is he has the entire top, and down coming down towards the lake are all the fingers going down towards the lakeside of his property. This one finger that I sat on that comes into our property is the one finger that comes off that top down into us. It's the only one in a different direction. And in the past, I've gone up there. Last winter, two winters ago, I was up there walking around doing some markings for some of the property work that we're getting done in the upcoming years. So I was out ribboning some stuff, and I noticed a bedding area, and there were probably like 12, 15 beds in there. I don't think they were all bedding at the same time. I think it was a doe group bedding there in the winter, later on in the season, just kind of like moving around. But I always had that spot in the back of my head. And for the past couple of years, I've gotten really caught up on the cameras say the deer are here, so I need to go hunt here. And this year, I finally decided to kind of get away from that and say, okay, the cameras say the deer are here. Now, where does the sign say that they're coming from? I know what deer are on the property. Now I got to find a way to go find them. So I went up to the top over there, which normally, you know, I'm not typically a top hunter. I typically prefer to stay on the lower end, not the bottoms. I'm not crazy about hunting bottoms. The wind is just too unpredictable down there. But I typically like to stay on the bottom quarter, play the thermals pulling down. I'm typically an afternoon hunter, so that usually plays more towards that. But this morning I went out there, I decided to sit up at the top, and I drove the Kubota in, which we haven't done that much either. I've always been nervous about driving the machine in. But I went in the dark, I drove the machine in, I parked about 200 yards, maybe away from where I wanted to sit, and I walked up. I picked the spot out of the, I picked a tree out in the dark, which I also typically don't like to do. I'm not a big fan of picking trees in the dark. I don't like to not know what my shooting lanes look like. My biggest fear is the sun coming up and I have nowhere to shoot. Hey, what's going on, pup? So this was kind of a, this was like a sit of firsts. There were a bunch of firsts going on, and I get up in this tree, I start climbing, and everything is going wrong from the very beginning. I start climbing. I never realized when I started climbing that I hooked my bow up upside down. So I had hooked my bow, like my tow rope to the bottom of my bow instead of the top. I start climbing up. my tree stand is getting caught on all the trees as I'm like the branches of the adjoining trees as I'm climbing up. So I'm making all this ruckus. I get up to the top. My stick falls off of my fourth stick falls off of my belt. Now I'm not going to climb down. The sun's already coming up. I'm climbing without the light on. So now I'm getting set up. I go to pull my bow up. Turns, like I said, I hooked my bow up upside down. So now my arrows are getting caught on everything on the way up. And I'm watching my arrows fall off my freaking bow one by one. And by the time I get it past the last limb, my last arrow is literally hanging by a thread, dangling out of my quiver. So I finally get it up. I set that bow up, that arrow up. I'm like, all right, well, now I got one shot. I take my hat off as I'm setting up my camera shit. My hat falls off my camera arm. So now I got my hat at the bottom of the tree, two arrows at the bottom of my tree, my extra stick at the bottom of my tree, and the sun is up, and I'm not even ready to go. Finally, I was obviously a little worked up. And once I finally got everything set up and I got my tree set, I heard some like rustling in the leaves, and a nice a spike walked by, you know, I don't know what, 20 yards, 30 yards away, whatever. Once I got settled in, I decided to start my typical grunt and calling sequence. And from that point forward, the day turned on for the rest of the day. There wasn't a time I hit the call or the rattle bag that a deer didn't come in. I called in some spikes at first. Obviously, I'm not going to shoot them. And then I hit a tending grunt rattle call. And this really surprised me. I hit the rattle bag. And within like a minute, not even, of finishing my rattle sequence, I heard some leaves going from behind me. So I turn around, and as I'm paying attention to the sound, the leaves stop moving. And I called again. When the leaves stop moving, I called again. And this doe comes hauling ass straight from my tree. Never did I ever think a rattle would bring in a doe. So this doe comes in, and when she got it about 20-ish yards, she was in range. There was something she didn't like. I don't know what it was. I don't know if she came into where she thought she should see a deer and she didn't see a deer. But she kind of just like stopped and just fed in that area a little bit, kind of looked around, and then just turned around and started walking away. As that doe started walking away, I heard another deer coming up from behind me. I saw another doe coming up, and she came straight into me. That's the deer that I drew on and I took a shot at. So she comes on in. She's coming straight from my tree. It was for a saddle shot, it was a strong side shot. So I'm set up for this shot, and as I'm standing there, I'm trying to reach behind me to grab for my camera. Because when I'm sitting back, my camera's on my left side, and I got to bring it between me and the tree to make that strong side shot. So I'm trying to bring the camera, and I can't get that camera around. And that was on the first deer, the first doe that came in. And I didn't get a shot at that one because she never finished coming in all the way. Now I'm already set with my bow in my hand, and this other doe comes in. I'm like, screw it, I'll shoot this one. So she comes in 8 yards, you know, gave her a bleat, took a shot, and, you know, she went off. I thought I missed. The shot was low. So I waited a little bit, climbed down, checked out the arrow. There was a bunch of white hair on the arrow, so I knew obviously right away that I had missed low. I didn't think I had anything. On the arrow, it was just like tallow, white, fatty, like hair, whatever. No blood, not a single drop of blood. So I just climbed back up in my tree. And when I was up there, I went to go draw my bow. And I used the Garmin Zero digital sight. And in that sight, it has like a self-alignment system or whatever. I don't want to go too deep into like the details of it. There's videos on the YouTube channel of me using it in the past. If you want to go take a look at it, you know, we could touch on that in the future. But when I went to go do like a test draw to see what was going on, the sight seemed to be out of alignment. So I climbed down and I drew again on the ground, thinking maybe, you know, I wasn't bending in the tree the right way or something. And it turns out the sight was off. So as I was going back to the cabin to re-sight my bow in, I found blood. Tracked for a little while, I don't know, 100, 200 yards, and I didn't find any blood or anything, or I didn't find her. I was finding consistent blood as I was going. So I climbed back in my tree. I let that sit for like, I don't know, 2-3 hours. Long story long, I guess, at this point. We ended up not recovering. I called a dog tracker. I spoke with him a little bit. He said from the sound of it, I missed low, which when I went back to the cabin and shot, I was six-ish inches low, 6-7 inches low on the target. So My takeaway from there, and this is going to serve moving into the next topic today.
I mean, you think
is,
it could have happened maybe while you were pulling it up? Maybe getting maybe, tangled and everything? It could have pulled the sight out of alignment?
Very well.
Because the sight's pretty big with that garment. It doesn't have like a 2-inch... it's pretty fat on the end.
I think so. Yeah, it is a big sight. What I think happened too is as I was trying to get it up through the trees, I was obviously pulling on my bow, and then it was like kind of tapping into my sticks. I don't know, man. I keep the bow in my car this time of year. Maybe the heat stretched the strings out a little bit. The axle to axle was off by a 16th of an inch. I don't think it's gonna do. That's gonna do that. I really don't know. It very well could have, maybe as it was caught on the branches and I was trying to pull through the branches, it like, you know, changed the, like that joint. Maybe it pulled on that joint. I don't know. It is what it is. Bottom line is I always preach that you should shoot as much as you can before you get in the woods. The animal deserves it. I should have shot my bow before I went out this weekend. I didn't shoot the bow. The bow is off and that's on me. It is what it is. But the positive coming out of all that is this is the time of year for calling, and the calling is working very, very well. I called in probably, if I remember correctly, 8 deer I called in that day. Joey, our cousin Joey, just called in and shot a 7-pointer this morning. And I've been hearing stories of my
deer like crazy too. It's just yeah. I haven't been able to get my deer to come in.
That's what I'm saying.
To be honest with you, I think it's because we've been pressuring the property so much. I mean, we've shot 7 deer on this property already between me and the other guys hunting this property, you know, for the club.
Yeah.
It's a property that we're supposed to be harvesting a lot of deer. It's part of the program. And, you know, everybody's got to do their part. And we, you know, I think we've done our part and maybe we've even exceeded it a little bit. And myself, maybe just for the added content, but you know, what did I do? I just kicked something, you know, I think we put a lot of pressure on the property. I think that with all these deer having been harvested and then tracking them, bringing them out, gunning them, whatever else, I think that there's been a lot of pressure put on that property. And then, you know, where I had been hunting, where I had been seeing the bucks, they kind of haven't been there. And I had to try to find. And I thought I put a pretty good – I sent you some of those rubs that I had found that were all real fresh and bright and new. And I think he went and kind of was, again, he – you know, I like water. He was along where that buck nest shot where it was. There was a bit more of a river, not as much of a creek, but it's not that deep. It's like 3-4 feet deep. And then I went to this little stream that kind of feeds it. It's like a feeder stream, feeder creek. And it seems like he's running that edge now on there. And I wanted to get in there. But then again, you know, I got hurt. So I ended up backing out of there. But
yeah, I mean, it really is a season for calling, and I'm going to, at some point in this, I'm gonna walk away from the camera real quick and actually get my extra grunt tube. I said in the last episode that I wanted to show the listeners what my grunt sequence sounds like. I don't have the rattle bag. That's in my car. I'm not going through my bag right now, but I'll grab my grunt tube. But the really cool thing was every deer that I heard and I called at came in. And the nice thing is we have a really young age structure on our family property right now. We have a lot, I mean, a shit ton of 2-year-old deer. I mean, they're everywhere. And honestly, I'm starting to think we have a decent amount of 3-year-olds and we need to bump it up to 4 because we have some pretty nice 8-pointers walking around that after seeing posts and this other deer we call Night Walker that has been walking around at night. After seeing the caliber of deer that they are and seeing what a 5 or 6-year-old looks like on our property, I'm starting to think some of these deer that I thought were 2 years old or 3 or were 4 years old or 3, knowing that the caliber of what they turn into. But it was really cool. When those deer came in,
goes to show you what happens if you just let them get that extra year. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think a lot of people just have a misconception of, you know, what a deer in the Northeast should look like when, you know, if you're being selective. I mean, I know that there's a lot of public land guys. Most of the properties that are around here don't even have antler limits. So people are just weekend hunters and shoot whatever they want. There's some properties that are 3 or better. I think you said New York statewide is 3 or better, right?
I think it for the most part. Yeah. Pennsylvania statewide is 3 or better. I think New York might be by county. I'm not positive. I know for sure where we're going to be hunting is 3 on one side.
Yeah, so you know,
Pennsylvania's,
I think that kind of also allows the kind of class of deer to get a little bit better. I think they put that in place because the deer numbers are maybe a little bit lower and they want to let the deer grow. But you know, when you're doing that, that also kind of, you know, is going to help the okay. When you go onto a mountain, let's just say like where you have a property, where our friend John in New Hampshire just started scouting, where I'm hunting, which gets hunted very hard because of the population control that they're trying to do. Where we hunt, my father just recently shot, he harvested his Halloween buck. We have a YouTube video about that. And I just recently talked about in the most recent video that we posted, I posted a picture in the thumbnail of Gio and his nephew. We hadn't been on that mountain in a couple years. My dad had a little bit of an injury going on his shoulder and stuff like that, so he hasn't been on that mountain in a couple years. I myself have started to branch out and started to hunt other properties with a little bit of scouting that I've been having some success on. And, you know, just because I've been having some success, I've seen deer that I wanted to target. I've kind of just stayed there and kept hunting there. And I think because you've got your property, you and your brother and your father have kind of gone up there and started hunting that property. So the public land that we used to hunt as, you know, growing up and recently, no one's kind of really been in there because for a long time, people know us in that area. People know that we hunt there. And, you know, between me and my father and my brother, you and your brother and your father, six. Plus, we usually have a couple friends or other family members, our godfather. They usually come with us, too. I mean, we've got a bunch of guys on the side of that mountain and, you know, other people. It's not like, oh, like they won't go. But we have, you know, maybe like Gio, right? Gio's now got his nephew that's over there hunting. There's a couple other guys that hunt with us and they hunt alongside us, no problem. But even him, he hasn't hunted. So no one's been on that mountain. And literally within a week of each other, there's three deer that were taken out of there.
Three
and they
hammers.
Were all over 100. They all would be over 100 if they were scored. Easy.
Yeah.
My dad had a 9-pointer. It was broken off. But, you know, if he would have had that point, he had a nice deer. Gio's 10-pointer was a very nice 10-pointer. And then Dominic shot the 12-pointer with double-split brow tines.
Both of those deer were beautiful. I mean, one of them was high and tight, if I remember correctly, with like some mass
Gio's
on them.
Gio's 10-pointer.
That was beautiful. Congrats, Gio, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Beautiful
they did
deer.
A great job. That was really cool. But again, that just goes to show you, if you just give them a year or two, you'd be surprised at the caliber of deer that you'll see pop up. And it's, I think it's really honestly because in the Northeast, we know that the public land is not managed as it should probably be. I mean,
I got to give it to PA. PA's doing a pretty damn good job from what I've seen being here. I've seen more timber cuts on the map in Pennsylvania within an hour drive of me in any direction than I've seen in all of my time in New York, New Jersey, or Pennsylvania. I mean, New Hampshire, without a doubt.
They don't do anything.
No.
New Jersey. There's a couple fields that they lease out to farmers, I think. They do some corn. They do some soybeans sometimes. They do a couple things. But, you know, other than that, they're not in there doing any timber stand improvement.
No.
So, you know, we don't really have that caliber of deer. But, you know, what normal people would say, oh, you know, I'm waiting for a 3 or 4 year old at least. I mean, we might need that one extra year to kind of get it because, you know, the nutritional value is not as high. The, you know, the pressure is really high too as well.
I mean, look at Brian, our guest from a couple weeks ago. He was talking to us about how he's found a pocket where, for whatever reason, whether it's genetics or the nutrition
I don't know if,
or
he,
the food
did
or whatever.
Did he mention if it was public land or private land?
He did say it was public. He kind of told us where he bear hunts. I'm not going to release that here.
No, I'm not saying that.
But...
I don't remember him telling us if where he deer hunted was public or
yeah no he private. Said it, he said it was public and for whatever reason it was going on well
permission
and he said people aren't going to believe him, they're going to think he's something private, but like he's just in a place where the guys who hunt with him manage or they're very selective, and everyone that hunts with him in that area follows kind of the same thing, you know? So it's kind of like what we're talking about, where we're hunting in that spot in Jersey. When you have a group of guys together that, you know, maybe they don't own the area, but if they hunt it the same way, you know, it makes a big difference. Like we have 130 acres in New York. Our neighbor has another 130 acres. Between the two of us, that's 260. By no means is that big enough to hold deer. But between us, we've agreed on a certain caliber of deer that we're willing to shoot. And since we bought the property 4 years ago, and the hunting club that was on our property now no longer is obviously there. And that property I was just talking about that connects to ours with that whole mountaintop, that's 600 plus acres. The hunting club that used to hunt there is no longer allowed to hunt there. So now you have 600 acres worth of woods that are harboring shelter for these deer. We have our woods that are, we're being selective. We have a timber cut coming. We are going to document all of that both on YouTube and podcast. But we're planning on reshaping our whole property to welcome deer both early season and during the rut. So there are all these massive changes, positive changes in the last 5 years where you have less hunters, less deer being taken, less woods being disturbed, and the woods that are being disturbed are being managed to promote the growth of deer and grouse and whatever else you want to have there, you know. But the future for us, if everything goes to plan and we continue with the plan that we've set out, the next 10 years for us are going to be really, really, really exciting.
Yeah. So, you know, let's segue into the topic for the day. You know, we want to touch on it again. Like we said, we're just going to do a little relaxing video here. So, you know, we're just going to talk about this for a little bit. But, you know, there are some people that we talk to that are having less success. And maybe they've only had a couple sightings, or maybe they only hunted on the weekend and they haven't been able to get into the deer that they've wanted to. We just want to talk about a couple things that we've done when we've hit these slow patches. So for me, one of the roughest years for me was the year of COVID. It wasn't when COVID first hit, because I think COVID first hit, it was like December, January when COVID first came. So it was kind of like the tail end of that first year of COVID. For me, that was a big wake-up call for me. I like to dabble in a little bit of survivalist bushcraft stuff, and I do take pride in some preparedness. And one of the things that I've went into during COVID was, okay, we need to not like go full board, but we started rationing some of our food. We didn't want to spend as much time in public. We didn't really know what the truth was yet. I'm not going to talk about how anything was handled or anything, but when something like that happens, you have a global pandemic, you don't know what's going on. You want to do what's right for your family, right? So I'm trying to make the right decisions. What is this, right? There's a virus going around. I don't know how contagious it is, nothing. Before I get any facts from anyone, we need to do what's right for our family. So we took precautions. We tried to stay safe. We used a lot of what we had put away to keep us sustained so that we didn't have to go into public. And a lot of that was deer meat. At the end of that first year of COVID having happened, I was pretty much down to no deer in the freezer. And, you know, we've always usually got a little bit left, but, you know, I can normally go through about 2 to 3 deer with me and my wife, a year. So at that hunting season coming around, I was really like, I need to get deer. I need to get deer because I want to provide for my family. And I think, I don't know if it was my mindset, I don't know if it was because I was forcing it, I don't know if it was because I was making poor decisions because of my heightened sense of urgency, but I was forcing hunts, I was maybe sitting areas that were maybe a little too, I was putting a little bit too much pressure on areas. One of the things that I ended up getting myself out of that, you know, even like we saw, the playoffs for baseball just happened. Aaron Judge kind of went through a little bit of a slump. And, you know, he was able to kind of closely get out of it at the end there. But he went back to some basics, right? He talked about with his hitting coach about how if he can bring his front leading leg a little bit closer to the plate and square up his stance, he started hitting the ball. And his first at bat when he started doing that, he ended up hitting that home run in game 4 or 5, whatever it was. I don't know off the top of my head. And that's kind of really what my advice would be. Get back to basics. You know, one of the other things that we have been focusing on lately is mature deer. And I know you're going to probably go down that avenue. But, you know, when you're taking it back to basics, if providing for your family or putting meat in the freezer or just having interaction with deer, take it back to basics. You know that deer are going to be coming for food, potentially water as well. We've had the water discussion, and they want the bedding. They want the security. You've got to find the sign of the deer that are making fresh sign where they're bedding and where the food is. Now, when you're on public land, especially in the Northeast, we don't have these sprawling acres of public land. A lot of times you've maybe got like 1,000, 1,300 acres or something like that, completely surrounded by private property, whether it's businesses or people's houses.
Or the state land you can't hunt. Or you can't, just state land you can walk on it, but you can't have your firearm on or whatever,
there's,
you know?
Recreation only, stuff like that. So, you know, and there's a lot of times you could go in the middle, and again, specifically I'm speaking about New Jersey right now, which has a lot less than maybe some of the other states in the Northeast. You could go into the dead center of one of these properties and be as far as away from everything as possible, and you could still hear the highway. Yeah. I mean, it's like, so you're not going to get away from it. So the thing is, these big draws of, you know, food, you might not have like these big ag fields where, you know, deer traversing maybe acres to get to these food plots, and then maybe they're working their way back. I think what I'm trying to get at is get back to basics, find the fresh sign, whether it's fresh scat, deer trails that are kind of a little bit more defined. Now with the opening of the leaves, right, the fresh leaves are down. Some of those well-beaten trails are kind of faded away because now you got this big fluffy layer of leaves on top of those densely run trails. They might not be as easy to find. I would say look for the fresh sign, look for the fresh scat, and look for now in this specific time of the year, look for those thicker areas where you know that deer are going to be gravitating towards for a little bit more shelter. And again, we know that the rut is here. You're going to want to be looking for these funnels where these different hubs are coming together, whether it's fingers coming down off a mountain. If you've got maybe a small depression in the middle of a mountain that cuts like a little pocket, where now you have a bunch of benches that are surrounding this. They you know, especially bucks, they like cruising these benches and scent checking these does, whether they're above them or below them. So definitely travel corridors, bedding areas, fresh sign, just get on deer. Try to find any deer, and if it's a sighting in the morning, where are they coming from? If it's something that you're wanting to do, is maybe harvest something better than what you saw, then go closer to where you saw it coming from. If you have time, if you're hunting in the morning and it's like maybe 9 o'clock and the sun's been up for a couple hours and you see a deer coming from your northwest, coming up over a ridge, well, next time you sit, why don't you sit a couple hundred yards closer to that northwest position and see if you can see where that deer was coming from and kind of put some of those puzzle pieces together. I guess that's how I'll start, and then you can kind of give a little bit of your hints, and then we'll kind of bounce off each other.
Sure. I think at this point of the year, the first thing you have to ask yourself is why. If you haven't found success, I think when I say ask yourself why, there's really two reasons. It's either A, you have your expectations set to a certain standard. If you're like me hunting in New York, you have your sight set on a specific deer or a specific caliber of deer. And if you haven't had a chance to find that deer yet, either he's going to move in now that the rut is hit and he's searching for doe, or you may have to wait until this pre-rut portion of the year passes on. But if you're someone who has just been going out, you're just looking for a deer or a deer that's going to make you happy, and you just haven't had any luck yet, I really think you hit the nail on the head. I think you want to food and water they're still looking for right now, but that's all secondary. Most importantly, I think at this time, you want to be finding those doe. Like you said, those benches, the ridge tops, wherever the doe are, you want to hunt them like a predator. Not hunt them like you want to hunt the doe, but you want to hunt them like you're a buck. And you want to get downwind of them, or you want to get like where the thermals are pulling down, like the downwind side of the thermals, I guess you could say. But wherever the dough are right now, you want to be where the Bucks are cruising to smell them. I think the benches is a great tip. Luckily, where I was last weekend, I think was just the perfect storm. Sometimes when you look on a map and you see a finger coming off of a mountain, you see on either side about like a third of the way back from the point of that finger, you see like an indent on both sides of it. And in my opinion, if a deer is going to cross over a finger, that's where they're going to cross in that indent. So I was lucky enough or fortunate enough to get into like that, the top of that, those indents on both sides. And I never actually had a deer cross over the top. They came up one side, searched around, and went down the point, which was actually pretty interesting. I wasn't expecting that. But yeah, I think you gotta find the food still. Obviously, they need to eat. They're going to be looking for water. They're chasing these doe like crazy. And you want to hunt these, you want to hunt the doe. If you know of a doe bedding area or a place where doe like to eat, you got to be hunting where those bucks are going to cruise to smell them wherever they are at this time of year. Also, the rut, the pre-rut is probably on in most places now. I think last weekend, a week and a half ago, it was like spotty in certain places. Like the colder areas probably hit just slightly earlier, like a week or so earlier, and they got hot before, like, for example, your area. I think I was like a week ahead of you, if I'm not mistaken, as far as like the rutting activity goes. Yeah. But I think at this point right now, if you're in the Northeast, if you're anywhere from Maryland to Maine out to like Western Pennsylvania, I think right now is your time to capitalize. If you're out hunting a specific buck or a specific caliber of deer, now is the time of year where you could go sit again downwind of those doe and use those calls, use those rattles, use those tactics that are going to draw a buck to where you are. I think now is the time of year to do that. Not to say that if you don't capitalize now that you're not going to have this opportunity again, because after the first peak rut, when that bell curve starts coming back down, those bucks are still going to be cruising for the next group of doe coming into estrus. So it's not the end all be all right now, but these are some things I would do if you're going out this weekend.
And you know what? Another thing too to not overlook is find out what they're doing now and make notations. There's a lot of times where I'm in the woods and I'm making notations because, you know, not every single season is exactly the same. But if you've gotten a little bit of a backlog on the different things that have happened to you, you can tell yourself, okay, well, these are the conditions that I'm experiencing right now. These are the conditions that we've had since the beginning of the season. Certain years might replicate, and then you might say, okay, well, you know what? 3 years ago, 5 years ago, I had similar conditions, similar things were happening. Let me go back and see what ended up happening in that year, and then I might be able to get myself back on track. So, for instance, right now, we know that we're in the pre-rut rutting stage, so the bucks are definitely seeking these does. A lot of times what these bucks are going to be doing, other than just being on terrain features, is they're going to be walking perpendicular to the wind direction. And they're going to be doing that because they're going to be wanting to cover as much ground as possible. So let's say you've got a property that sets up, it doesn't matter what the terrain is like, but right, we have north, south, east, west, and we've got a crosswind from the west blowing to the east, right? These deer are going to walk north to south, south to north, back and forth, up and down, basically grid searching for these does. Well, it doesn't matter which way. You're going to have bucks coming from west to east, grid searching from north to south, and you're going to have bucks coming from the east, and you're going to have them grid searching north to south, up and down, and they're going to keep walking these crosswinds, scent checking for these does, knowing as they get higher in elevation, you know what you mean? You might have a doe, and then as soon as they get that scent, boom, they start following that scent, and then maybe they might kind of go directly west or east, maybe, you know, I would say if you're in a stand or if you're in the woods right now and you see a deer going into the wind, he's onto something. He's onto a doe, he's got her scent, and he's going towards her. If not, if he doesn't have a doe, he's tracking her, he's most likely, he's hitting those crosswinds.
And I think if they're, the wind is a great indicator. I think the way the buck is using the wind is definitely going to tell you what he's doing. And I've learned a lot of that from dog training. when you're, you know, when you have a dog work in the wind, or if they know that they're on a trail of a bird and they lost it, and you start seeing your dog put their nose in the air, they're using that wind to try to figure out what's going on, you know. So, but I also think to join with that, if you have a buck coming in, whether he's perpendicular to the wind or if he's going with the wind or against the wind, whatever, but if you also pay attention to his demeanor and listen to what he's doing and what he sounds like, I think all of these things come together and kind of paint the picture. When I was calling last weekend, I'd have a doe come in, and then the buck would come in behind her and just and just looking for her and just calling at her one after the other. And even when I had an arrow in the ground, I had shot the doe, both my doe took off. The buck came in within like another 30 seconds, 45 seconds after taking the shot. He came literally on her trail, step for step, exactly where she walked. He got to my arrow, smelt it. I think I sent you the video, and he kind of like jumped a little bit. Like he was like, what the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. And then just kind of like went on with his day looking for the doe. You know, so I think if you're listening to what they're doing, paying attention to the demeanor, there's his nose to the ground, there's his nose in the air. All of those things together can tell you, is he getting aggressive? Is he looking for a doe? Is he just starting to push them around? I think it could tell a lot about what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing that happened to me on the property that I'm at where it finally kicked off. I was doing some calling, doing some rattling, and I was calling in small bucks, yearling bucks, spikes, four corns, small deer, left and right. I mean, left and right. I was sending you and our friend in a group chat, I was sending you guys selfies with them just walking around, looking around, trying to find it. And every single one of them was nose to the ground, grid searching, because they came into me and there was no doe there, right? I had not yet, still to this day, even though I know that the rut is happening, the pre-rut's happening, whatever, I have not seen a doe being chased on the property I'm hunting. I have not seen the doe being followed. I have not seen a doe being chased.
Do you think it's because there's such a high number? Do you think it's because there's so many doe around?
I mean, so this is another thing I want to touch on before we wrap up today too, though. There is a lot of deer there. I've seen solo does, does that had two fawns. There was a doe group. It was a doe and two fawns. There was another doe group. It was four does. There was another a group of yearling deer, I think it was, that I had seen. There was no mature deer. It could have been one of the does that was harvested, left those deer behind. There's a couple small groups that I've seen. So when I see the deer, I'm familiar with some of these groups of animals, right? So when I see, like, this is the thing. When I'm hunting my target buck road rash, I almost always see this little button buck before I see him. Every time I see him, I see the button buck. There's two times that I've seen road rash on hoof in during the hunting season in daylight hours. The first time he caught me off guard, he was there for a split second, and it was literally last light. But I had earlier seen the button buck. The day that I almost had a shot on him, same thing. The button buck came down the same, not the same trail, but he came down the bank and was walking the river. I haven't seen the button buck since I've spooked off that. The road rash either. They both are gone. But since I started calling, since the pre-rut happens, there's these two spikes that have been literally following me, I feel like, everywhere I go. Doesn't matter where I go. I could be on one side of the property, the other side of the property. I call, I rattle, they come to me. I'm telling you.
Yeah, and you're sure they're the same ones?
Same exact deer. I have them on camera multiple times. I know that they have that one of them's a spike. One of them's got a spike and a fork on one side. Then there's another one that's got three and a spike. And there's another small five pointer that's got three and a fork on one side. The other five pointer that was running around with the seven pointer that I shot, also gone. All those deer have been basically in the same spot. When I told you the buck nest, those are the buck that were back there. It was the button buck. It was road rash. It was a seven pointer. And it was a five pointer. Every single, well, obviously the seven pointer's in my freezer now, but the other three deer gone.
Do you know of any other bucks shot by any of the guys? Like
none of the other guys that are
on
hunting on my property. There are people in the club that are hunting other properties that are nearby, but none of the, there's a couple of illegals in there.
Okay.
Not.
Well, we'll leave it. We'll leave it at that.
There's a couple guys. And, listen.
Illegals.
If I didn't mean it to come out that way, and that just shows you the temperature in this country. Anyway,
yeah.
There's people who have private property bordering this property. If I had private property bordering this property, I'd probably have a deer stand out in my backyard too. So those I'm not even worried about. There's a couple guys that are coming from the business side where you're not even allowed on that side. It's private property. It's not even part of the same. So the people where they have their, you know, it's their house, they're bordering up to the public land. So, you know, what it is, what it is. This other side is owned by the company that's there, the property. So it's private property. It's not even anything that can be hunted.
Right.
And there's a couple stands in there that I've seen. So.
Okay. Real quick, I want to go back. I think, I don't know if you have anything else to add. I think we're kind of getting to the point where we want to wrap this up. I want to just backtrack real quick to something you said earlier, and then I'm going to run down and get my call real quick, because I promised the listeners I would show them, let them hear what it sounds like. But you mentioned earlier, keep notes, like notate what's going on out in the woods. We've had this property now for 4 years, and we're trying to learn it as well as we know the woods that we grew up in when we were younger. My brother told me, he said, it's the first week in November, you gotta be here. Or he didn't tell me where to go. What he basically said was, this is where I normally sit every single year since we've had the property. I've sat here on this weekend. Either I or the gentleman who sits on the neighboring property above him shoots a deer there or shoots at a deer there every single year. Nice buck. You got to go. Now, the problem is where he sits, we typically have a decent kill plot going. This year, it didn't take very well. Spoiler alert, we're getting somebody else from the Sportsman's Empire here sometime in the near future to talk about food plotting, spring food plots, fall food plots in the spirit of no-till, and hopefully we can get some of these things worked out. But over the last couple of weeks, I've been working my way back into the property. So I started off closer to the road, down by the water, on one of the food plots closer to the road or the roadside of the property where my dad had a shot at posts. And since then, I've been working my way back. And I saw the sign going from the top where I sat last weekend down towards the food plot my brother typically sits in. That's why I decided to go sit where I did. And it's all because we keep a mental log, but honestly, I want to start keeping a written log, especially now I'm starting to hunt three different states. Things are going to start getting really congested. But if you can keep a log going, it might not be, like you said, the exact same spot or the exact same area of a property. But if you know every year this weekend bucks get going, you need to mark that on your property and get into the areas where the deer typically move through. And then you could get in there, boots on the ground, scout, and do your thing. So I don't know if you have anything else you want to add on that.
I'll just get some filler while you go get your call. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, the last thing I'll say about this is, as far as the notation goes, you know, I don't want to go that far into it because there's maybe not a lot of people who can do it. But if you have the opportunity to be on your property all the time, maybe you're retired, maybe you work close to your home and you're able to get home quickly and hunt after work, and then you can hunt on the weekends, and you're able to hunt throughout the entire off season. Throughout the entire deer season, and then even in the off season, you spend a lot of time in your woods taking notations. But taking notations in a way that it's telling a story, right? There's a lot of people that I know that are big outdoorsmen that love being outdoors that take their notes in almost like diary fashion, right? And then a lot of times they publish those notations, and it becomes just, you know, one man's vision or one man's journey through his property. And, you know, it ends up being almost romantic in a way to where people kind of think about their property. Obviously, they've got a lot of emotion tied to it. And, you know, there's a lot of details in there. And there's a lot of diehard outdoorsmen that really cherish those types of things. And, you know, those are things that people would like to hear about, like to read about. Obviously, it's educational. Things that happen on a certain property are applicable across all properties, because deer are deer, right? They're not going to just change their genetics and what they are. But you know, it's definitely something that people will remember There's very few encounters that I have that I don't remember, right? I mean, when we talk about going out into the woods, sitting up in the dark, sitting all day, once you actually get that deer to come in, especially if it's one of your target bucks, it's very hard to shake that from your memory. I mean, it's almost burned in. It really honestly is. So, you know, again, like I said, a little bit of notations. It's something that you can always fall back on. It's something that you could read. It's something that you might enjoy reading. It's something other people might enjoy reading. So, you know, as much as you can kind of develop a relationship with where you're going to be hunting, and you can kind of understand it a little bit better. You can learn the different groups of deer that are there, how they move through your property. And again, like you said, just because you don't have your own private property doesn't mean that you can't treat the public land that you hunt like your private property. It is yours. It's there for you. You paid for it, right? A lot of money comes out of our licenses and other things that we purchase to help conserve these lands for us to hunt. And, you know, we need to maybe actually start thinking of them more as our properties and less like, you know, it's public land, and kind of brush it off to the side. And like you said, if you find a group of people who are like-minded, who are going to be treating the property the same way that you treat the property, that are going to be harvesting the animals in the same respect that you are going to be harvesting the animals, there's no reason why we can't make our own timber stand improvement. Even if we're not allowed to trim trees and do stuff like that, there's no reason why we can't go in there and, you know, there's plenty of people who go in and they harvest deadfall and they make firewood for their family. There's nothing that says you can't do that. Anything that's live, that's living, standing, you can't trim. But there's no reason why we can't go in there and manicure some of the properties that we hunt and just make them a better place for the animals that we're going to be chasing.
Yeah, for sure. I got no problem with that, man. And that's kind of why I got into the side business I did. I mean, y'all know that I'm a teacher at this point. But I have my own little forest management business on the side too. I'm looking to build that and grow that along with this. Go figure, Wing and Tail Forest Management. Same thing, man. I love doing this. I love bettering the woods. The truth is, we're only here for a blip in time. We're here for maybe 100 years if we're the luckiest of the lucky. And this world has been around for billions of years already. So for us to feel like it's ours and it belongs to us is just absolutely ridiculous. So I always try to do something that is going to leave that tree, that section of the property, the entire property, the whatever, better for the next person, because I know how tough it was to use it in the condition I found it in. So why not try to make it a little bit easier for whoever gets to come and enjoy it after me?
Hopefully our kids and nephews and nieces and grandkids.
Yeah, 100%, God willing, right?
All
right,
so send us off with a little...
I have my call here.
Send us off.
Real quick, right? But literally real quick before I do it, we haven't done this in a while and I do feel guilty. I want to thank our sponsors real quick. Just want to throw a quick shout out to Andover Hunt and Fish. They've been great over there to both of us. They're over there on, what is that, Route 206 in New Jersey?
206,
in Andover. If you guys need anything outdoors related, hunting, fishing, gear related, anything, go on over there.
Firearm transfers, new firearms, used firearms, live bait, hunting apparel, bow technicians, they got everything.
Yeah, they're really going to help you out. We also have Big D Custom Shops in, I want to say it's Jefferson, New Jersey on Route 15. I should know that better. I'm sorry. They're more tailored towards... No, I think they're on 15.
Okay.
They are more geared towards your bow shop. They're going to help you tune your bow, get you into a new bow. They are a licensed dealer for Darton, who we're also sponsored by. We are they're licensed to sell Expedition bows as well. Chris over there is fantastic. Anthony over there, the bow tech, is absolutely incredible. He's helped me set up my new Darton this year. If you're into bowling, they also have custom bowling gear over there. And if you need any, you know, accessories or anything for your bow, just go on in there and Chris will take care of you. Absolutely. Already mentioned Darton. I want to thank Dorge over there at Fire Knock. He's been Fire Knock. He has been awesome with us recently. We are planning on doing a full 10 to 15 episode series on arrow building and just bow shooting science. Really looking forward to that. And then some of our other sponsors are Cuddy Back Cameras, Antler Grow. They've been great for us also. So thank you very much for supporting the channel. Thank you so much for supporting us and our listeners. And we look forward to building with you. Now, with that being said, call. Ah, shit. fun fact, this isn't actually the call that I use. This is an old call. Honestly, it's probably from the 90s. My dad bought like three of them back in the day. But I can still simulate how I do it. So when a buck,
before you go, because I know you're about to do a beautiful sequence. Don't sleep on the burp.
Don't sleep.
I'm telling you, I burp all the time. If I have to burp, I just burp as loud as I possibly can. I've called in just as much deer just burping than I have doing the grunt.
And sometimes you let it come out the other end.
Sometimes when I'm on the ground, I'll tell you, you know, you're one of the people, you've said this a lot. Sometimes you're going to do your buck sequence. If nothing's going on, you want to do it a little bit louder. But if you got a buck that's maybe close by, sometimes it's hard to use the same call and do it lower. I'll do just a little, just something like that with a little burp, just a little, get a little air in your throat or whatever. It's softer. It's not as projectile than it, because these can be like, right? You know what I mean? So
yeah,
sometimes it can be a little pitchy. And sometimes when they come up, you want that throaty, deep. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm after hearing these deer this weekend, I don't know that I'm ever calling loud ever again. I don't think it's necessary. I didn't need to do it this past weekend. It was pretty windy. So I'll do it, and then I'll explain why I do it the way I do it. But it's pretty much just, so not my call, not the greatest call in the world, but you guys get the idea.
Like a sprinkler head, back and forth.
Yeah. Back and forth, left to right, right to left to right, put it down. I literally do 30 to 50 as I'm going. And the reason I move, I can't take credit for this. I heard this from somebody else. So I'm not taking credit for this whatsoever. But if you turn as you're moving, it makes the sound like it's moving. And it makes it sound like a buck is tending to a doe, as that's supposed to sound like. Now, sometimes I'll throw something like that. Very rare
I don't want to go too, we'll have to do a video on calls or whatever.
100%.
But, the different pitch of different calls. Mine is so much deeper than yours, whatever that was.
Yeah, and I'm sure it sounds deeper in person too. That sounded like a freaking duck call because the reed keeps keeps fucking up.
I'll tell you what. There was this buck that I spooked one time when I was walking into my stand when I was hunting in one of the private public properties that I hunt, and I'm not gonna go crazy into it, but look up buck roar.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. I've heard that in person, and I'll tell you what, I felt it in my body. It was only like 15 yards away from me, 20 yards away from me at the most. So it was loud and I was close, but I'm telling you, I felt it. Like that's how. So sometimes I have a call that kind of mimics that. I let those out. Once in a while. Not, it's not every 10 minutes. I'm like,
yeah, It's all based off demeanor, and I'm not gonna go. I think we definitely need to do a calling episode. Yeah. Maybe we could even
snort
do that wheeze. Next
I
week.
Love
that,
a good snort that'd wheeze.
Be that'd be pretty cool. Snort wheeze, in my opinion, I use that if my call kind of got their attention, but they're like 70 yards away and they're trying to figure out where it is. My snort wheeze, everybody knows a snort wheeze, so I'll just add that in here real quick. I'll take my call and instead of blowing in the mouth side, I'll just turn it in backwards. Now.
That's weird.
I don't use this call though. I use
the thing built in that you could do a snort.
Is it gray and it's got three attached to it?
No, it's I don't think it is. It's definitely not gray. I don't know. I'm sure that a buck call can come in multicolors.
Yeah. I had a call like that where one side it was like a rutting buck, another side was estrus doe.
No, they're
and then the top
the
of it
mouthpiece.
Was okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, no, we should definitely do a calling episode. I think that would be a lot of fun. Coming up in the next couple episodes, we have John joining us too, another member of Wing and Tail Outdoors.
Hopefully Joey will join us too. He shot a buck. Yeah. Hopefully he'll come on and tell his story.
Yep, you know, we got some other members we want to start introducing and bringing around. They're definitely on YouTube. They're going to be on YouTube. And we got some future guests coming up, so we're really excited. We want to thank you guys for listening in. Hopefully you have found some success. If you haven't, hopefully some of the stuff that we've shared with you tonight is going to help you moving forward into the season. If you found some value out of what you listened to today, please do us a favor. Just scroll on down to the bottom of our page there on Apple Podcasts. 5-star review with a nice little written review, quick couple words. Anything you liked would be fantastic. Really goes a long way. It helps us out. And if you're over there on Spotify, they don't really have an option for a written review. So just a quick 5-star click will go a long way for us. Again, thank you so much for listening to us.
If you're on YouTube, please like and subscribe.
Yeah, absolutely, guys.
We gotta start saying that. We're on post these on YouTube now.
Yep. All of our podcasts also air the videos that air the next day. So our podcast audio airs on the Sportsman's Empire on Thursday. On Friday morning, we air the video version of the podcast in YouTube. So if there's anything that we're talking about and we're referring to something on the screen, a map or a call or whatever it is, and you want to see that, just go on over to YouTube and that's going to be there. With that being said, thanks again for listening in. We'll see you next week. And remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a good one.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.